Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. Before the break, one of the themes of our Project Milwaukee Reporter Roundtable was that it was a hard year to analyze as it was taking place because, well, a year with so much change had never happened in Wisconsin before. But is that really accurate, or have there been equivalent eras in the state's history that the passage of time leads us to overlook? Milwaukee historian John Gerda is a regular Lake Effect contributor, and he talked with Stephanie Lecce about how the past year measures up.
We didn't quite bury the meter, but we came close this last year. But there certainly have been upheavals in Wisconsin's past, and we're a human society, so it's just part of the nature of being in society. Going back to the 19th century in the time of the Civil War, even though we were all part of the North, there were immigrants who took exception to being drafted to the point that they rioted in various parts of the state. In the 1880s, there was such a sharp divide between labor and capital that there was a general strike that shut down Milwaukee. And there was actually a militia called out by Governor Jeremiah Rusk, and they fired on a crowd of unarmed workers and killed at least seven people. So, I mean, there were lethal impacts on some of the discord that Wisconsin's had in its past.
Well, I know that in the late 19th century, there was also the Bennett Law controversy. Can you tell us a little bit about that? We've talked about it before, but I want to have you touch on that as well.
I think if you look at the long view of Wisconsin's history, where things tend to be more contentious is when you have ideologues in office, people who are convinced that there is one way to govern, one way to look at reality, basically. And in the case of the Bennett Law, it was a governor named William Dempster Hoard, who is known as pretty much the godfather of dairying in Wisconsin. He was the editor of a magazine, a newspaper called Hoard's Dairyman, and just was tireless in terms of moving Wisconsin from mixed farming to dairying as a stock and trade. As governor, he was determined that everyone should learn everything in the English language. And this is back in the 1880s, when you still had a huge proportion of immigrants who were determined to preserve their language and their culture, largely through their parochial schools. So it was a little like you have, you know, this ethnic fire and he pours gasoline in it, and it just exploded. The Bennett Law controversy ended up with a sweep in the very next election of Democrats who moved Hoard and his fellow Republicans out of office. That was extraordinarily divisive, and it was the result of, you know, one governor and people in his camp as well. It wasn't just him, and obviously it had to pass the legislature, saying this is what we shall do, and not necessarily being cognizant of the variety of viewpoints in their constituency.
Was the rhetoric as charged then and in some of these other instances you've talked about as it is now?
Back in the 1800s, it was probably even more charged. This is before you had effective libel laws on the books. So things like, remember back in an election back in the 1850s that Byron Kilburn was involved in, he called someone a whiffling, hypocritical pimp. And they would question each other's ancestry, talk about their mothers. So it was kind of in your face politics. So sort of the Jacksonian period in the mid 1800s, there was a great deal of personal attack that went along with politics. So it was almost a blood sport, and sometimes it was actually literally bloody because you'd have these torchlight parades, and you might have Democrats and Republicans kind of intersecting at the wrong corner, and you have kind of a brawl as a result. So certainly things were probably even more vitriolic then, but the level of discourse we've become more accustomed to in the last 50 years or so, we certainly have departed from that norm.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the state's, if you want to say, progressive nature. I mean, we did give rise to the progressive tradition, the Republican Party itself. Why has Wisconsin, throughout its history, remained this unique state that kind of mixes conservatism and progressivism?
It's a really good question, and I don't think there is a definitive answer. I think we share some things with Minnesota, who have the same kind of, perhaps even schizophrenic, political character. You know, you go from Paul Wellstone to Jesse Ventura. You know, in the same few years. So it's not just us, but there is something about the Upper Midwest that seems to have kind of this very unusual hybrid of progressive ideas, progressive leaders, and obviously Fighting Bob La Follette was a national figure for much of the early 20th century. And then you have, at the same time, you know, much more the reactionary, you know, we don't change it or strip it down, you know, minimum government. Those two things seem to have coexisted here. You have anomalies like a McCarthy. I mean, people didn't know he was crazy when they elected him. You know, that came later. He was elected in 46, and it wasn't until 50 or so that he really discovered anti-communism as his cause. And he saw he was getting a reaction, and so just ran with it. So he was not elected at first, you know, on the platform of, you know, hunting for communists in the State Department. At the same time, Wisconsinites did reelect him in 1952 by a smaller percentage of the vote, but they still did reelect him. So we've always had, you know, kind of this very, very curious blend of, you know, kind of the right and the left. My own tendency is to think that Wisconsinites, Upper Midwesterners, they tend to be more purple. You know, we may shade to one side or the other. And then when you have an issue or a figure, in the last year, certainly it's been Scott Walker, who will pretty much throw down the gauntlet and say, you know, this side or that side, then the purple becomes kind of blue and red. And certainly that has been true absolutely in spades in the last year.
Based on history, is it possible for us to become purple again? I think right now people are looking at the state as almost a war zone, as completely divided. You look at polls, Wisconsinites are polling pretty much evenly mm-hmm. In support or against Governor Walker. And it's kind of hard to imagine right now that we'll ever mix again, we'll ever have that purple hue again.
I think that if you had asked most Americans back in the 1860s if we would ever be one nation again, you would have had the same skepticism. But the Civil War did end, and we did manage to reestablish civil society, you know, for all 48 states and then two more in the beyond the continental grouping. So, yes, I think there's always a possibility of coming back together. I think it probably will not happen in the very near future. You know, we have, obviously, the main news in the early part of 2012 will be the recall, and that is guaranteed to do absolutely nothing to bring us together again. But it's, you know, I think it's very much the result of reaping the divisiveness that was sowed. So it was, I think, inevitable.
Speaking of the recall, I wonder, obviously, Wisconsin has had divisive times before, and there have been divisive figures in our past, but recalls haven't necessarily been part of that.
No, by no means. And actually, that's part of the progressive legacy is direct democracy, recall referendum initiative. You know, those are things that were part of the La Follette platform back in the early 1900s. So in a sense, you know, one reform a century ago, you know, has resulted in some of the procedures going on now, at least, you know, being able to recall a sitting governor. But that has not happened, and certainly that is a measure of the extreme to which the current discord has gone. You know, the fact that you would have people working very hard to get 750,000 signatures against a sitting governor. But I think it's an equal and opposite reaction, you know, to what happened earlier this year. You know, so it was it's physics. It's very simple physics. You know, if you do something that No, in the case of Scott Walker, take away collective bargaining and, you know, everything from voter ID to the redistricting, the things that have such a partisan cast, people will react. People will react. You know, and it's hardly a surprise.
Does this say something about how Wisconsinites like their change in the sense of perhaps being more incremental versus these kinds of sweeping policy changes?
I think there are a lot of people who are uncomfortable with the current level of discord. And for all the partisans you have, and certainly they are in the media, they are in the legislature very clearly because it's their job, they're professionals, and they're kind of working for the greater good of either of their parties. But for a lot of Wisconsinites, no, there certainly is a fatigue that has set in, and we are on the verge of a year of nonstop campaigning. So if we're tired now, we're really going to be tired, you know, by November of 2012. I think Wisconsinites and people in this region, you know, we're pretty nice people. You know, I mean, we tend to like to get along. And when there are forces or individuals in our midst, you know, who kind of want to blow that up, you know, there is discomfort and reaction. So I think, if anything, where this might end up going is back to some calmer waters, because that's where people want it to go. You know, people will at some point get back to a place where there is not this, you know, constant, we're in a minefield, these constant explosions, you know, day after day after day after day.
How far back into recent history can we look to find the seeds being sown that set up what's happening here in the state and what we've seen over this past year and will see over this next year?
In a very sort of stark chronological sense, this goes back to the late 1990s and 2000. And if you look at the causal agents where the career of Scott Walker really took off, was when you had the pension scandal in Milwaukee County. And there were the recalls. You know, there were a number of county supervisors were just jerked out of office. Tom Amon had to resign before he was recalled. So Scott Walker came in on a platform of change and reclaiming a government that he thought and said with good reason, you know, had become unreasonably, not self-enriching, because there was nothing corrupt going on, but this it was just an extraordinarily boneheaded move, you know, to have these pensions that were a multiple of whatever you could find in the private sector. So I think if you look in the modern period in Milwaukee's and Wisconsin's political history, you kind of look to that in the last 10 to 15 years when people were given a reason to distrust their government. And I believe strongly that the real casualty there was not that – and these were Democrats. The casualty was not the Democrats who lost their seats. It was public trust in their government. And the forces of small government led by Scott Walker were able to exploit that and, I think, in my view, exaggerate it. My own view, and I think this is something that is very much a part of Milwaukee's and Wisconsin's heritage, is a feeling that government is all of us. This is something that we take as a mutual enterprise, something in which we all participate and that works for all of us. And going back to the pension scandal, the message there was government's not us, government's them. It's these people who are out to feather their own nests, protect their own interests, and the Republicans have just run away with that. And it's certainly true on the state level. It's true on the national level as well. So my sincere hope is that as the pendulum has swung so far, it's become a wrecking ball. And my hope is that it will swing back to some kind of sustainable middle.
Well, John Gerda, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you, Stephanie.
Historian John Gerda is the author of 19 books, including The Making of Milwaukee and Cream City Chronicles. He's also a regular Lake Effect contributor, and he spoke with Stephanie Lecce. After another break, we will continue our Project Milwaukee State of Upheaval coverage with conservative blogger Rick Essenberg and his take on the meaning and the legacy of the past year. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.